nationwide. We bring you latest current issues, discussions and information. Nationwide on Radio Miraya.
Hello and good evening to you. Thank you so much for being part of Nationwide. My name is Sunny Martin and we are coming to live from Juba this evening. Today we are going to be discussing the 25th anniversary of Women, Peace and Security. This year marks the 25th anniversary of the adaptation of the Resolution 1325, the first of 10 Security Council resolutions on women, peace and security. And this resolution stressed the importance of women's equal participation in all efforts for the maintenance and promotion of peace and security. The question we are going to be asking is, why has the UN Security Council Resolution 1325 still remained so significant 25 years on? And what progress has been made in promoting women's participation in peace building and decision making, more especially in a country like South Sudan, where so many challenges are facing women when it comes to peace building? Joining me to answer all these questions, I am joined by three guests this evening. I am joined by the UK Ambassador to South Sudan, David Ashley. Good evening. You are most welcome to Radio Miraya, Ambassador.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having us.
And also we are joined here by the World Food Programme Country Representative, Mel Ellen McGroarty. Good evening and thank you so much for coming to Radio Miraya.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And also representing the EVE organization is Annette Yobu. Good evening, Annette, and thank you for making your time to come to Radio Miraya.
Good evening to you. Thank you for having me here.
All right. Maybe just briefly, maybe Ambassador, you can explain more about this resolution for some people who may not understand the resolution of 1325. Shed more light about it briefly before we go to our discussion.
Thank you. So the UK is proud that we were the drafters, in UN speak, the pen holders for the UN Security Council Resolution 1325 back in the year 2000. It reflected and continues to reflect sort of two aspects. The first is the disproportionate and different impact of conflict on women and girls. And sadly, we have many evidence of that in South Sudan. And second, it calls for the inclusion of women in peacemaking efforts. I saw when I was in Rumbek a few weeks ago how women can be peacemakers, can play a key role in achieving sustainable peace. When I met with female beneficiaries of our Women's Peace Dialogue Project, the Bridges of Peace. And it's clear that when women are supported and provided with the space to participate, they can be key change makers for peace in their communities. So that is the fundamental aspect of Security Council 1325. But sadly, we've not made as much progress as we would have liked to over the last 25 years. Mm. And so the resolution and what's the key principles behind it remain as relevant today as they did back in the year 2000.
And why is the resolution 1325, why is it still so significant? Let's take the context of South Sudan women.
Sure. Well, as your listeners will know far better than myself, women and girls continue to bear a disproportionate impact of conflict here. They face gender-based violence, including conflict-related sexual violence. They face displacement. They face economic instability. They often are single breadwinners for their families. They face displacement. And although the government signed up to a 35% representation of women in senior positions in institutions, it remains the case that women's voice is not sufficiently heard when it comes to the pressing issues of peace in South Sudan.
Okay. And Annette, you are the representative of EVE organization. Some people will be asking what progress has been made in promoting women's participation in peace building and decision making, and how do you also engage with WFP?
I would like to say thank you for those who supported us in the development of our National Action Plan on Women, Peace and Security, which was adopted from the UN Security Council Resolution 1325. Ever since its adoption and launching in 2016, we registered the country some achievements. We have seen as women, the women themselves took it upon themselves to use the pillar enshrined within the National Action Plan, the pillar of participation in decision making, in peace building, and they decided to mobilize themselves as women to go ahead and demand for the gender representation at all levels of leadership. We saw women gathering together in Entebbe, women from refugee camps, from the neighboring countries. Women went from the different states of South Sudan to Entebbe and discussed on the contentious issues of the agreement. By then, when the high-level revitalized forum was going on in Addis Ababa, the women came together and said, yes, we are left behind. We have not been taken to Addis Ababa in order for us to put in our, to have our inputs or our voices considered. So the women came together and said, okay, what should we do? Let us strike the head. And they decided that we want 50% representation at all levels of government, and that is what they presented. Although the parties to the agreement didn't consent with that, they said, okay, we shall give you your percentage, but it will not be 50%. We are increasing from the previous 25% to 35%, which was given unto us. And this all came in just because the women used the UN Security Council Resolution 1325 to back themselves up boldly and go in and demand for their positions in leadership. We've also seen as a country that 1325 has helped in the professionalization of the security sector institutions. They are now implementing, they are using it in their institutions. We've seen the National Police Service going ahead and coming up with action plans to implement the Women, Peace and Security agenda within the police force. We've seen the military also doing the same, developing its own action plans to be able to implement issues of women, peace and security within the forces and in the areas where they work. We've seen also the issues of the establishment of the special protection units in the various states. At the moment, we have about 28 in the different police stations all over the country. We have got special protection units, and this has improved on access to justice.
For women?
For women,
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. We shall be coming back to you later on. Let's find out from the humanitarian and development perspective. You are the WFP country director. How does the World Food Programme mainstream gender equality and also protection into its response in South Sudan, especially in conflict-affected areas?
Thank you. I mean, this resolution, even though the World Food Programme is not at the political edge, but we're very much at the humanitarian edge,
and
at the
people want to eat.
Yeah, and at the grassroots edge, and you know, it's a critical resolution because we do see the impact firsthand. You know, I mean, as the ambassador said, the impact of conflict on women and girls, particularly, is absolutely devastating, and we see it every day in our work. So we made a conscious effort to mainstream gender and protection into everything that we do. And that talks about, you know, women in leadership, like myself.
Yeah.
You know, WFP is walking the talk in terms of even across the units, but more importantly, at the community level, working with women's groups, empowering women to be agents of change. And, you know, I come from a country where it's the first country we celebrated our peace agreement, the Northern Ireland Peace Agreement, just 25 years quite recently. And it's the first peace agreement wherever women signed on to, that had women signing on to it. And that was women from the community, the women's coalitions groups from the community building upwards. So for us, it's a very important critical. I mean, women are critical to food security. And today is World Food Day. You had programs on early in the day celebrating World Food Day. So we very much, it's mainstreamed across our programs. And we deliver in a way that we put protection at the heart of what we do. Because, I mean, the violence that women and girls face in South Sudan, the gender-based violence, I mean, so we do everything possible to mitigate that in the programs that we deliver. An important aspect of what we do, and I want to give it, is school meals, getting girls into school and keeping girls in school for the future, because they too are the future leaders of South Sudan.
What impact is it having the school meal, more specifically on the girl child education, where you provide to those schools? Have you realized an impact? Are more girls coming to school?
It's amazing. You know, it's amazing to see young girls coming into school, and they can come to school because, yes, South Sudan still has probably, a bit like my country 60 years ago, where the boy child is favoured for education. So if we can give the family an alternative that sends the girl child to school, they will come to school. Last week we celebrated, and I know the ambassador also did it, the Girl Takeover Day, you know, with one of our organisations where the young girls come from these schools. And they take over my job for the day, they take over the ambassador's job for the day. And you can see the value of getting those girls in school. And it's going to change society. Educate a girl and you change the community and you change the country.
Yes, and girls and young women are often frontline responders in crisis. How does WFP and the other UN agencies support and amplify their leadership?
I think a lot of work has been done over the last years in you know, mentoring young girls, training them, giving them the opportunities to be able to develop their skills, pushing them forward. You know, in WFP and UNICEF, we have internship programs as well to be able to bring them forward. Very much focused as well, working with local groups that have female leadership and bring up female leadership.
Yes, Ambassador, like you had just heard from Mel, just you held an ambassador takeover for two school girls last week. Can you tell us what was the purpose of all this?
Thank you. Well, it was a great pleasure to host two 17-year-old girls, Angelina and Melling, from far away from Juba. Mm-hmm. They took over my job, which is great, so it meant I had a day off.
They were the ambassador of the day.
They were the ambassador for the day. So they did things like they held a press conference, they met partners, they met staff, they led staff meetings. And all of that is to give young women, girls in South Sudan, an opportunity to show that being an ambassador or being head of WFP or being a leader is not that difficult.
Yeah.
It's perfectly within their capability if they're given the opportunities. And this is about giving them the opportunities to shine. And the other aspect of it is to hear from their perspectives. So the session that they led on the issue of child marriage, something which obviously affects them and their peers very directly. You know, I think it was very powerful. It was for women only, so sadly I couldn't participate. But for the women in the British Embassy, it was a very powerful and moving and important session, whereby we heard the kind of issues which impact on girls like Angelina and Melling. And obviously, it wasn't just the WFP and the British Embassy. I know the European Union delegation, the Canadian Embassy, many other organisations took part. And I pay tribute to Plan International, who organised the day. But this is about giving opportunities for girls and young women, and that's why complementary to what Mel and WFP are doing in terms of supporting girls' participation in school through the full school meals program. We have supported, as the UK with our partners, more than 1.2 million girls in South Sudan to access education since independence. Something we are very proud of, because for every one of those 1.2 million girls. It gives them opportunities. It gives them knowledge. It gives them confidence, and it enables them. It helps them to have a brighter future.
Okay, and Annette, despite the global commitment, women still makes up less than 10% of the peace negotiators, and also they face a lot of challenges in terms of participating in a peace building activities at the community level. So what are the main barriers to the meaningful participation of women in peace building, and how do you address that?
The main barriers are limited civic and political opportunities for women empowerment. We've realized that there are spaces given to women, but temporarily, and also they have got conditions placed alongside them. We've seen women being given positions and withdrawn. We've seen women being stopped from speaking in public. All this happened to the women leaders that have been given positions. They are threatened. These things are going on. But one thing that we'd like to see is for the diplomatic, for the government and to come together with the partners so that they resolve the issues, the international communities, the regional actors, to put pressure on the government so that they can be able to comply with the revitalized agreement for the resolution of the conflict in South Sudan, because they themselves gave us the 35% representation. Mm-hmm. They need to back us up by allowing the women with the potential to lead for as long as they can be able to deliver. Yeah.
And as a South Sudanese, and you have been involved in this, following the peace agreement so far, like you said earlier on the Entebbe meetings, are you satisfied with the level of the implementation of the 35% affirmative action given to women?
As an organization, we've made an assessment and we've realized that it's not satisfactory, because we are given positions and at the end the positions are withdrawn, and we monitored right from the formation of the transitional government of national unity in 2022 early. We realized that the positions that were meant for women, some of them were given to men, and we were not convinced.
But also, so if the government spokesperson is here, he will say, in the presidency, you have seen at least two female vice president, and the speaker is also a woman.
We still need more, because what has been happening is like they've been giving us a cake on the plate and then withdrawn away. So we still need more women in leadership, so that they can be able to inform policy, in order to be able to engender the policies, in order for them to be able to bring out women-related issues. So we have that deficiency still existing. When you go down to some of the states, we don't have enough women in leadership, and that is still a challenge to us.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we also have the issue of the lack of leadership capacities in mobilizing grassroots people in order for them to come up for peace building events, meetings. This calls for the agencies to support these women to come up at least and join regional or international meetings so that they can be able to negotiate, so that they can be able to bring in the knowledge down to the grassroots and help the communities.
Okay. Yes, before our lines are open, because we need to open lines for our listeners to call in and ask questions about this important topic. We are discussing the 25th anniversary of women, peace, and security. And this year marks the 25th anniversary of the adaptation of Resolution 1325, the first of the 10 Security Council resolution on women, peace, and security. Our lines are 0912067879 or 0912067929. You can also send us your questions to our SMS number 0912177141. And in the studio, I have the UK ambassador to South Sudan, Ambassador David Astley. We also have the World Food Program Country Director or Country Representative, Mel Ellen, and also Annette Yabu, who is the EVE representative, staff here with us in the studio. You can call us later on and be part of our discussion. Yes, Ambassador, the question coming in here from our listeners is saying that what can the international communities, more especially the partners, the Troikas, which you are a member of, do to support the government of South Sudan in achieving the goals of the women, peace and security, because most women in this country have suffered a lot from all sorts of violence. So how can the partners empower or work together with the government to ensure that the officers who are in charge of prevention of crimes affecting women can be empowered to protect our women? This is coming from Jackson here in Juba. Another SMS is, this one is going to Annette, and this is from Deng. It says, Annette, you said we don't have enough women in leadership, and yet more educated women prefer to work with UN agencies and NGOs because of better pay. Who do you blame for that? Women don't want to join political parties. Instead, women like you would prefer to work with NGOs for better payment. How do we encourage potential educated young women to join political parties and fight for their rights in the government? This is from Deng here in Juba. The same question again. This is coming from Pony, is writing from Juba here. Says, my question is going to the UK ambassador to South Sudan. I understand that GES, that is the Girl Education South Sudan, has been have had a great impact on girl child education in the country, where they're given some money to keep these girls in school. Could you tell us, is the program still going on with the global financial challenges facing the world and donors cutting back their funding? Is the UK government continuing to support these very important programs? This is from Pony in Juba here. Yes, Ambassador, let's begin with the two questions.
Okay, thank you, Jackson and Pony, for the questions. So in terms of Jackson's question about support from the UK and Troika and the international community, I would say that women and girls are at the center of what we do in this country in terms of support. We're proud that since independence, I've already mentioned the support for girls' education, and we'll come back to that. We're also strengthening maternal and child health, another critical issue. Indeed, last week we announced a further £4.1 million, over $4.5 million to support maternal and child health
In South Sudan.
In South Sudan, enhancing 11 maternal wards in Western Bahr Ghazal, Eastern Equatoria, Jonglei, and Unity States. This is a part of a package of additional support we're providing to the health system here. We're also seeking to reach the most vulnerable through humanitarian assistance, including our assistance through the World Food Programme. And we're supporting inclusive peace-building efforts, as I mentioned, through organisations such as the Peace Building Opportunities Fund and Peace Canal. Alongside all of that, the fundamental thing which South Sudan needs above all, and I think, if I'm allowed to say, I think the yes. women of South Sudan need more than anything is peace. And that is the fundamental ask that we have in all our engagement with the government and with the parties in South Sudan, the overriding priority of peace. And women have an important role to play in that, both as participants. We're speaking to the women in the Lake State a few weeks ago. They can either act as instigators and supporters of violence, or they can act as the people who try to persuade their communities along the path of peace. So women are not only victims in this, they are also active players and participants. If I can turn to the second question by Pony about girls' education, and thank you for the kind words about the girls' education program. We too are very proud of the impact it's made. It is true that the UK, like other international partners, is facing significant pressure on our international aid budgets. What I can say is that we will continue support the education sector in South Sudan. Education, along with health, along with humanitarian support, will remain the three pillars of everything we do in South Sudan, because we know of the impact it can make. Thank you.
Okay. As Annette, there was a discussion from Deng that most educated young South Sudanese women will prefer to work with UN agencies, NGOs. They don't want to work with the government or even join political parties because of poor pay. What can be done to encourage educated South Sudanese to take up their leadership role in the government?
Yeah, I think the women just don't refuse to work with the government. They also like to join political parties, but they are stumbling blocks in between. Women working with NGOs are not only interested in money, but they're also interested in delivering because they work directly with the communities. And then also with the government. The government provides space, but the competition, as long as you qualify, you go there, wherever. But we want to say that we, as the women who are working with NGOs, we are always complementing the work of the government. Where the government has not reached, that's where we go and implement and further castigate whatever the government would have wanted to be taken to the grassroots. So it's not that women do not have the interest of working with the government. We have the interest. And then secondly, also, the issue of the political parties. Right now, we are heading off to the elections period. We have got, for instance, women living in places far as Upper Nile who'd like to register, who'd like to take part in the elections as candidates. But we've got the issue of the registration, acquisition of the national identity card as a prerequisite for you to register with a part of your interest in order for you to contest, which is unaffordable by some of the women coming from all the way from Upper Nile to Juba, simply because the system that we have is centralized. I wish the government, the Ministry of Interior, which is the issuing ministry, decentralizes the issuance of the nationality ID cards so that the women can be able to register with the political parties of their interest after acquiring the ID cards from the nearby stations within their constituencies.
Okay. Yeah. And still our lines are open. You can send us your question to our SMS number, or you can prefer to call us live on 0912067879 or 0912067929, or you can also send us your question to our SMS number 0912177141. We have a couple of SMS coming in here. This one is going to the country director of WFP. This is coming from Gatluak in Bentiu, Unity State. It says, thank you, madam, for coming to the studio. We have many women who are going to be affected by the cut of the funds from the donor communities around the world, as we are aware. And he says, as the country director of WFP, how is this cut going to affect the nearly 80 million South Sudanese, majority of them are women, in terms of their feeding programs? This is from Gatluak in Unity State. This question is going to the ambassador, the UK ambassador to South Sudan. According to the population household survey that was conducted last year, the majority of the population of this country are women, over 50%. And he says, Can't the UK government, together with other partners, develop an initiative to use the women of South Sudan as an agent of peace, conflict resolution in the country? Because if the women come together and begin preaching peace, there will be peace in this country. But they lack only some funding. You should not give the money to the government, but you can get an implementing partner to do that. This is from Jackson, I think, yeah. Jackson from Juba here. Yes, Mel, this question from Gatluak in Bentiu.
It is certainly a very difficult resourcing landscape. The needs in South Sudan are enormous. This evening we are talking about a critical resolution, 25 years of a critical resolution that talks about the impact of conflict and insecurity on women and girls. A huge part of the humanitarian needs are driven by conflict and insecurity in this country, and that's where we see devastating impact. We try to respond as much as we can, but we need to prioritize. We're trying to focus on, you know, doing early recovery livelihoods. But at the end of the day, you know, what will be the solution, what will be the sustainability is peace, mm-hmm. and local solutions with local resources. You know, and I cannot shy away to say there will be no impact. There will be an impact. We will have to prioritize the most needy. We will have to make what we have go further. But at the end of the day, peace and stability, local solutions, local resources, is what's going to channel this country forward.
Okay. Yes, Ambassador, supporting the women of South Sudan to be agents of peace building and reconciliation healing. That's the question.
Thank you, Jackson, for the question, which is an excellent one. And one we're already doing through supporting women-led organizations. We absolutely agree with you that women are 50% or more of the population. Young people under 30, are over 70% of the population. So between them, young men and women and the women of this country constitute the absolute majority. And it is right that their voices need to be heard. Their futures need to be respected. They need to be given the opportunities. It should not be just for men, and I'm speaking as a man. It should not be just for men who have used weapons to determine the future of this or any other country. So absolutely, we are trying to support that through our support. I know that other partners are doing likewise, and I hope that through, as co-chair of the Working Group on Women, Peace and Security, we will continue to work with our partners to ensure that women's voices are heard and their appeals for peace are heeded.
Okay. Yes, Annette, how can the local women groups or organizations be supported to take the ownership of the Women, Peace, Security agenda, and also lead peace-building initiatives that incorporate their voices and their needs?
Yeah, one thing is the government should allocate funds for women initiatives and media to disseminate and raise awareness on the Resolution 1325 so that they can be able to work effectively. One of the mistakes that we saw and what resulted into the reason as to why we didn't fully implement the first national action plan is immediately when the action plan was launched, there was the war which sprang in, and the parliament, which would have deliberated on the budgeting, the budgetary allocation for the funds that would have been given to the National Action Plan's implementation was scattered. So we didn't have money allocated for the implementation of the action plan, and that affected us from disseminating the document fully to the grassroots so that the women can be able to know what the National Action Plan is all about, so that they can be able to grasp their rights and implement it. So what you want is the government to be able to allocate funds for its implementation so that we can be able to reach out to the women, and also for the women to be able to be supported with funds to do their work at the grassroots.
Yes, there is another question coming in here from Michael. And Michael is writing from Tomping in Juba. And he says, my question is going to the ambassador, the UK ambassador to South Sudan. He says, I agree with you, ambassador, that the only way for a sustainable peace for our women in this country is through peace and peace and peace. And you being an ambassador to South Sudan and also a member of RGMEC, what should be the best way of ensuring that total peace is restored to this country for women to enjoy their rights and also be agents of peace in the country? I'm looking at the kind of support the international community can give to the government of South Sudan to restore peace and tranquility in the country.
Thank you, Michael, for the question. So I was among those who were at the meeting of RGMEC last week. It was good to have a wide representation at that meeting to discuss the problems that are being faced and the deterioration that we have experienced over recent months in terms of the peace process. Mm. And the point that myself and all the international and civil society participants were making is that above all, that requires dialogue. That requires dialogue at the highest levels. And as I said at the RGMEC meeting, that has to include all the leaders, including Riek Machar as chair of IO. But it also has to go beyond the political leaders. It needs to involve the wider representation of the people of South Sudan, including its women. The future of South Sudan is not owned by any one group or one individual or one party. It has to be the combined efforts of the people of South Sudan. And so above all, that is what we are asking for. We're asking for dialogue to find a way through so we can achieve lasting peace in South Sudan.
There is another question here coming from Tap Dio Tap in Bentiu. My question is going to Annette. The women participation in the government of South Sudan is very low because of the nature of our politics in this country, where it's always involving violence. Do you think that should be the challenges or the barriers making women not to participate in this country, political decision, peace building, and also women, peace and security?
Yeah, I don't think because once women are in leadership, they are also performing the same role as the men. And the men, as they go out to insecure places, they are guarded as well. So the same thing should be done to these women in leadership so that they can go out, reach out to those insecure places, and perform their work as well there. But we are seeing the issues that are impeding women, that are affecting women from participating in leadership, as the lack of support from the men. Sometimes they look at women as incompetent, yet we have competent women. If there is any reason as to why a woman has been removed from her position, let it be said out clearly so that at least we iron it out, but not to be dropped completely in order to fade away so that they will not completely serve anywhere, because we've seen women whom up to now we don't know where they are. They have served and have been removed from the spaces. Up to now we don't know where they are. So we need women to be supported by the men. Yeah.
Okay. And there is another question going to you again, Annette. that many South Sudanese are not aware about the women, peace, security. Do you think it's also high time for more awareness on this crucial topic? As to you, another question is coming in here from Marielle in Juba here, also Tomping. And he says, my question is going to the ambassador. South Sudan being a member of the United Nations, what are the obligations? What are the obligations of South Sudan in terms of meeting the goals of the 1325 resolution on women, peace, and security? This is from Marielle here in Juba. Yes, Annette, maybe you can talk about the issue of awareness, and we give chance to ambassador before we conclude.
Yes, we need to do a lot of awareness raising of the Women, Peace and Security agenda. In the past few years, the first National Action Plan, we tried to disseminate it to the various places, the various states, but we realized that less was known by the people in leadership position about the National Action Plan. They didn't know much about it. Even people at the grassroots level didn't know much about it. Why? Because of the factors that we had, the insecurities within the country, the dissemination wasn't done well. We also had no funds, apart from a few of the organizations that got funds from the international community, and they went and disseminated in some of the places. So it's a few places that a few people know of the National Action Plan on Women, Peace and Security, but we still need to do more. We need to do more, especially with the second National Action Plan. We are even staggering at the moment. Why? Because we are going to celebrate the 25 years of the National Action Plan this year, but we are lagging behind. When you look at the region, Uganda is implementing its third National Action Plan. Kenya is implementing this is the last year of its second National Action Plan, but we have not done much to create awareness for our people, our leaders here in South Sudan, to be able to know and embrace the women peace and security agenda, because it's not only for the women, but also the men as well. They have to be able to know what is in order to support the women.
Okay. Yeah. Yes, Ambassador, the obligations of South Sudan as a member of the United Nations in terms of this National Action Plan of the Women, Peace and Security.
Yeah, thanks, Marielle, for the question. I think it's absolutely right that the South Sudan, very proud to be the youngest state, youngest country in the world. It's a great achievement. But with that comes commitments, comes obligations as a member of the United Nations. And one among the many relate to women, peace and security under the Security Council Resolution 1325. So let me just take one example. Sexual violence in conflict. The figures, again, for this year in terms of the numbers of some men, but overwhelmingly women, and girls who have been the victims of conflict-affected sexual violence is horrific. That should not be happening. We need to see determined action to end impunity for those responsible for sexual violence. And we also need to see action taken by the government and the parliament. So, for example, the anti-gender-based violence bill has been pending for some time, awaiting government approval and then awaiting the parliamentary approval. We would urge the authorities to take action on this piece of legislation as part of implementation of the National Action Plan.
Okay. As we conclude, let's begin now with Mel, as we conclude, what message would you like to share with the young women and girls listening today who aspires to be leaders of this country and also become peace builders?
I think have your voice heard. As women, we are half the sky. We matter and we can contribute, and we're critical to change. We're critical to peace. We're critical to progress in South Sudan.
Okay, yes, Ambassador.
I would repeat what Mel said and say that, you know, they have as much right to determine the future of this country as anyone else. And from the girls that I've met, they equally have as much capability, much ability and intelligence to be able to do that. So I think some of the most impressive, I've had the benefit of meeting many impressive people since I've been in South Sudan, but many of them have been young women, and I more power to their elbow, as we say in English.
Okay. Yes, Annette, what should be the priorities in advancing the women, peace and security agenda in South Sudan over the coming years, maybe next year, and moving forward, briefly, as we conclude?
Yeah, the priority is the dissemination of the second National Action Plan, so that the women can take up their positions and join decision-making, and then they use their space in the forthcoming electoral process. And also to our young people, they shouldn't wait for spaces and funds, but they should grab a humble beginning will result into a destiny. As if organizations started under a tree, there was no money, but right now we have offices in Western Equatorial State. The EU is supporting those offices. We have got 5 safe spaces for the young girls in Western Equatorial State, 2 in Mundri East and West, and then in Yambio we have got 3 of them, and they are functioning.
Okay.
And we see people coming up.
Thank you so much. And I would like to thank Annette Yobu, also the country director of WFP, Mel Ellen, and the UK ambassador to South Sudan, Ambassador David Ashley. We thank you so much for coming today and leaving all your busy schedule to come and share the 25th anniversary of Women, Peace and Security. We hope to talk to you some other day.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We cry for peace.
It is important for South Sudanese to take the lead in shaping their own collective destiny by demonstrating political will and common purpose towards a prosperous future for all South Sudanese. The United Nations family was proud to stand with South Sudan at its moment of independence, as we are proud to stand with its people today.
Love, peace, love.